This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the 4th of July movies, including The BFG, The Legend of Tarzan, The Purge, Election Year, and Swiss Army Man. I'm also going to be talking about some news, The Trailer Park, a Fat Guy 5 for patriotic films, box office predictions, and of course the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@themovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Today's news is kind of a hodgepodge of events. One of the things I just want to talk about, development news really quick. We've got Minecraft the movie. We all know that they're making that. After the Lego movie became huge, everyone was looking for the next big thing, and so they went to Minecraft, of course, because that's where it goes, because they're blocks. Well, the Minecraft movie has finally had a date. It's going to be coming in 2019, which is ironically when the replicants are taking over in Blade Runner. So you do the math on that one. Also, the Tetris movie, which is more mind-boggling. Minecraft, at least, is a world that you can build things in and things can happen. Tetris is a game about blocks falling. I mean, this sounds like it's going to be pixels all over again. They've come out and said that they're working on it as a trilogy. Dear God. Next little piece of development news is the Lost in Space TV show is going to be revitalized and brought to Netflix in 2018, which is them diversifying their slate of shows. Again, mark my words, people, this is where television is going. It's already competitive with Netflix for shows like Orange is the New Black and House of Cards, and on Amazon you've got stuff like Transparent. These TV shows are starting to gain some traction, and it's just going to suck the life out of broadcast television. Mark my word. Now, one little piece of news. This is really news. This is one of those things that I always complain other people cover because it's not news. It's just some weird comment from a filmmaker or an actor. In this sense, it comes from James Cameron. He finally gave an opinion on Star Wars: The Force Awakens. Now, the reason that's significant isn't just because James Cameron's a big director, and it isn't just because he's directed science fiction blockbusters. It's the fact that since 1997, for almost 20 years, his films were at the top spot domestically. For a long time, it was Titanic, until Avatar came in about 6 years ago and blew the roof off of that. So he's always been box office king, and he's still box office king internationally because The Force Awakens didn't come close to overtaking Avatar in the international box office, but it certainly did domestically. It did almost $1 billion in the U.S. alone. So of course, somebody asked him about it. And he said, quote, "I feel that George's grip of the six films had a more innovative visual imagination. This film was more of a retrenchment to things that you've seen before and characters you've seen before, and it took a few baby steps forward with new characters." Now, people are making a lot of hubbub about this. Here's the thing. First of all, you got to realize James Cameron's a technocrat. He is good at telling stories, but he is, like George Lucas, fascinated with the science and the visual and the technology. That's why he takes so long to make a movie, because he wants to perfect it. And that's cool, but I loved Avatar, but Force Awakens blows Avatar away. And yeah, it didn't do anything necessarily new and original with the visual technology. In fact, it was going to an old school. It wasn't pushing the envelope. It was kind of pulling back a little bit, trying to go for practical effects and models, even though it had plenty of digital effects in there. I think that James Cameron looks at things with a different lens than your average person, so I wouldn't read too much into this. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is when I saw this actually advertised at a movie a couple months ago. And I didn't hate it. I'm not wild about this new trailer that dropped, but I have to admit, I'm a little bit... embarrassed to say that I'm kind of looking forward to Bridget Jones's Baby, which opens on September 16th.
Mr. Darcy, don't worry. But I can't go back and keep making same mistakes. I'm pregnant when I can make new ones.
So you have no idea which of us is the father?
Surely one of those dates is more likely.
They're both equally likely.
So do bring along the father if you can work out which one he is.
I am not a fan of Renee Zellweger. I have never liked her, but I tend to like her performances in movies. I'm irritated with her as an actress, but she's a really good actress. So when I see her in a movie, a lot of times I'm like, doggone it, she did a great job in that. Like Cold Mountain, I didn't even particularly like Cold Mountain. I thought she was fantastic in that movie. And I thought she's adorable in the Bridget Jones movies. So, can they take away your man card? Is that even a thing anymore when they say they're going to confiscate your man card or take away your man card? Do people even have man cards? I guess people do. I guess the people who just have to rely on machismo. I have a lot of male tendencies, but I am sure enough of myself to realize I kind of look forward to this movie. I don't like Patrick Dempsey, but gosh, I think Renee Zellweger and Colin Firth again? Charming. The next one I want to talk about, this is going to grind my gears a bit. Star Trek Beyond. It had a new trailer drop this week. Let's just give a listen.
We were overwhelmed by something. Something we've never seen before. This is my last report as the captain of the Starship Enterprise.
I'm bracing for the pain and I am late.
What the holy flippin' monster tribble is going on with this movie? I remember seeing this posted on Twitter. I actually saw it in a promoted tweet where it's like, the Star Trek trailer featuring Sledgehammer with Rihanna. And that's when I kind of threw my hands up. I was annoyed with the earlier trailer of Star Trek, which features a Beastie Boys song, and it has a scene with them driving a motorcycle, because that's what they do in the 23rd century. And then I remember when that came out, and enough people reacted badly about that. Justin Lin, the director, was like, oh, I didn't expect them to put the motorcycle scene in. It's in this one, too. The motorcycle shots are in two separate parts of the trailer. This is about as un-Star Trek as you can get. A Rihanna song for a Star Trek movie? I get it. You got to market movies and you want to cross-promote. And I know that they look at this as saying, this is a whole new generation of fans. But you're so abandoning not just your fan base, but what made your franchise for 50 years. You couldn't make fun of this in a movie more accurately than they're doing themselves. I'd be surprised if Rihanna could point out in a lineup any character or name a single character from Star Trek. I'm not a big Rihanna fan, but the song's the song. The song is what it is. But it's like they're trying to attach it to it like it's a James Bond movie. And James Bond movies, that would be like coming in and having Kanye West do the entire soundtrack for the next James Bond movie. That wouldn't be a James Bond movie. Sure, that might be cool for a certain film. Plus, in the trailer, you're seeing them just destroy the Enterprise, which I imagine is probably something significant that happened. It would have been nice for it to have been a spoiler in the movie, but they put it all over the trailer, and that's the grounding force. But the other thing is, not the first time they've blown up the Enterprise. They blew it up in like Star Trek III. They blew it up in Star Trek Generations. I mean, by the time they got to the Next Generation, it was on the fourth Enterprise anyways. Paramount is desperately wanting to be relevant with this, and they're trying to justify the massive amounts of money that are being spent on a movie of this size, where what they need to do is they need to scale back to a $50 million sci-fi movie and make it cerebral. And on top of it, you have Chris Pine coming out and saying, oh, you can't make a cerebral Star Trek movie now. Well, you're an idiot, because you can still watch a movie like The Wrath of Khan or Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and say, hey, those are smart movies. Those things have some weight behind them. And they're not just a giant music video, which all this is doing is just reinforcing that. Who knows? I mean, Star Trek comes out in a couple weeks, in July 22nd. I'm still going to see it. I'm still going to go in hoping that it's good. But I'm getting less and less sure that that can be possible. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the BFG and the Legend of Tarzan. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, rolling into the movie reviews. Let's start off with the first one, which is probably going to be one of the biggest ones of the weekend. That is Disney's big friendly film, The BFG. A young girl in an orphanage is taken away by a giant when she sees him and whisked away to giant country.
Please don't eat me.
You think because I'm a giant that I'm a man goblin cannibal? You can call me the big friendly giant.
Oh my.
I catch dreams.
There are bad dreams here too.
Yeah.
This is originally written by Roald Dahl, who did books like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Fantastic Mr. Fox, Matilda. All these have been made into movies. And Roald Dahl is such a fantastic children's author, and he is one of those real out-of-the-box children's authors who's done some incredible things and have resulted in actually pretty good adaptations. The original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and then the remake Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is actually pretty good too. Fantastic Mr. Fox is a great movie, and Matilda's a great movie. So he actually has a pretty good track record. Now, Steven Spielberg is directing this, which it seems the perfect one for him to do. Danny DeVito did Matilda. That one has a lot more of an edge to it. But Steven Spielberg has the warm glow sort of holiday smoochy feel to it that makes the BFG actually come to life a little bit more. It's not as dark as like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It's not as subversive as Fantastic Mr. Fox's. And it's also not as sarcastically snarky as Matilda. So there's a certain charm and warmth to the BFG that works in Spielberg's hand. Now, part of the theme this entire summer seems to be a lot of CGI, and they use motion capture on Mark Rylance, who got an Academy Award for Bridge of Spies with Steven Spielberg last year. He is back playing the BFG, and they do mocap with him, and now most people recognize motion capture as the things you see with Andy Serkis when he did Gollum in the Lord of the Rings movies, or of course, when he did the apes in the Planet of the Apes reboots. With motion capture, you get a lot of Uncanny Valley, and it's inconsistent. And that's, I'm picking on the technical side of the BFG. The CGI at times looks gorgeous and great and photorealistic and amazing and jaw-dropping. And at times it looks very rubbery and plastic and not quite real and very cartoony. Now, part of it's because the giant's a bit cartoony with big ears and an elongated neck. But we're still not quite there, and it's very apparent, and it's not that I don't think that they got good people using the tools, because it's Spielberg, and it's Disney, and they've got the top-end stuff. So you get a little bit bogged down with CGI with this movie. The other problem with this film is the first half bogs down a lot. And the movie itself is almost 2 hours, which is too long. It should actually have had about 20 minutes cut from it. And it would have moved faster, because once you get to Giant's Country, you're like, oh, wow, the gee whiz. And then they're just kind of in Giant Country. And something else happens later in the story, and that's when it picks up again. It gets a little weird and goofy, but at least the story picks up. But during that first half, they're just sort of knocking around Giant Country, and it just gets a little dull. And that's something that Spielberg is is prone to do, especially as he's gotten older. He'll make longer movies. But imagine if E.T. were made now, and E.T. there was a... There's that opening beginning when E.T. and Elliot are working together, and he's showing them kind of how the world works and how Earth works. But it's very concise and it's very compact, and they move ahead with the story pretty quickly. They don't do it so much with the BFG. But that doesn't mean that it's a bad movie. It's still a charming little film, and it's sweet, and it's something you can take the kids to. And the girl who plays Sophie is quite fantastic in it. And they have some really neat performances. So I'm going to have to say that overall, while it has some foibles, the BFG still kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Legend of Tarzan. This new adaptation of Edgar Rice Burroughs' series tells the story of a boy raised by apes in a jungle and returning to help the natives.
You are Tarzan.
You may not like who you were. You may have enemies there. But you need to go home.
Your husband's wildness disturbs me.
I need you to scream for me.
Like a damsel.
He's Tarzan. You're Jane. He'll come for you.
I read a couple of the Tarzan books when I was in college, and I've never felt they've done justice to them in the movies. They either get overly serious, like what you had with Greystoke, Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes, that came out in the 80s, or you got something that is corny and silly and stupid, you know, kind of like the Disney animated one or the one with Casper Van Dien, or going back to the old Johnny Weissmuller Tarzan serial type. So they've never quite nailed Tarzan. And it's a difficult thing to do. And ultimately, it is problematic because it hinges on an incredibly racist point. And that is, it's not that Tarzan was a man raised by apes. It was that he was a white blue blood raised by apes. Because you've got an entire continent of black people who have been around the jungle in Africa. And you have different tribes with people being raised in the jungle or very near the jungle. And even in this movie, they've got the sort of the warring tribes who are hunting the apes at one point. So the underlying current, and it's actually pretty blatantly stated in the original books, is that it's not just a man. It's a white guy, and not just any white guy, but an aristocrat. And that is what allows it, because he's anointed by God himself, he rises to the top. There's a real manifest destiny feel to the Tarzan original books. You can't do that in movies nowadays. And they even go overboard to compensate by making this movie about them trying to stop slavery and the enslavement of the natives in the jungle. But the problem is the writing is just kind of all over the place. You never quite, they don't tell you what it's about until about halfway through. And they bounce around the story because it starts off with Tarzan after he's moved back to England. And it's him returning to the jungle. The character of Jane, played by Margot Robbie, who's probably the most interesting character and actor in the entire thing, she's so sidelined, and she is essentially just a damsel in distress. She's straight out of an old serial from the 1940s. It's not entertaining for her. She's not given really anything to do. She's just there to get Tarzan wanting to save her. It is the lowest level of damsel character writing. It's not good. And the dialogue's pretty bad, and Christoph Waltz as the bad guy is great if we just kind of knew what he was doing, but you really don't. And it's just this neutered version of Tarzan. It has some neat moments, but all of them are either predictable or uninspired. And once again, Hollywood has missed the mark on making a good Tarzan movie. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to say The Legend of Tarzan kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Purge, Election Year, and Swiss Army Man.
Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue with the movie reviews. Let's dive right into The Purge election year. This third film in the series finds a senator who is targeted during the annual purge when she tries to get rid of the murderous holiday.
Announcing the commencement of the annual purge. The soul of our country is at stake.
The senator's going to win. She's going to make real changes.
The purge has to come to an end. At the siren, all crime, including murder, will be legal for 12 hours.
Senator, let's begin lockdown.
All emergency services will be suspended. Your government thanks you for your participation.
I have a strange love-hate relationship with the Purge movies. The first one I thought was just okay. I didn't think it was great. It's a great idea, but I think the execution is oftentimes pretty dreadful. It works in a very limited sense with the first movie because that's essentially just a home invasion thriller. The Purge story and concept allows for some interesting things to be talked about and discussed, but in it, that its heart of hearts, the Purge is a home invasion movie. Now, the Purge anarchy completely screwed the pooch on it and tried to go to become an action movie, sort of a boots on the ground thriller. And it just failed miserably at it. And it was dumb. And part of the problem is the Purge, while it's a neat concept to play with, it would A, never happen. You'd never really see this happen because there's just too many ramifications from something like that that you wouldn't happen because people wouldn't just get it out of their system in 12 hours. There's a lot of human nature that it just flat out ignores. It's also incredibly one-dimensional, and I'm blaming that on the writer and the director, this guy who's done. This is his third movie. They're fiercely, almost aggressively one-dimensional movies where they are not thinking beyond like 2 seconds in front of them. These movies play checkers when the human mind should be able to play chess. And the problem with these movies is they get preachy and then they ignore a lot of reality that would exist in this framework. But part of the reason I was interested in The Purge election year is because, and I don't think this was any planning on the filmmaker's part, it just happens to be coming out right in the thick of probably what I would consider one of the most insane and unpredictable and chaotic election years I have ever witnessed. And this is not me looking at the election and saying, America's divided, America's always divided, and every 40 years, America's always divided. That's the way politics works. But this year is something special. I think we can all agree, both sides, or all sides really, can agree that this year's kind of bonkers. And I think this movie's going to benefit from that a bit. But it's still kind of a one-dimensional dumb movie. It does the boots-on-the-ground action movie more than it does the horror film. So it's a little hard to categorize. Now, it's very brutal and it's very violent, which you'd expect from these Purge movies. But it still isn't a very deep thinker of a movie. You can still see it just doesn't think past its own concept. And it has serious problems. Don't get me wrong. I think this is going to do well, and then we're going to see The Purge Origins or The Purge Year One. I guarantee you that's going to come out in 2 years. But, you know, this one, it at least works the story-wise. And Elizabeth Mitchell as the senator, she's actually, she does fine in the movie. She still looks good for it. She's in her 40s, like mid to late 40s. So, yeah, I have a real thing for Elizabeth Mitchell. And I think she's great in this movie. Frank Grillo's fine for this. It's just, it's not very smart. But you expect that with the Purge movies. It's way better than Purge Anarchy. And I would say it's probably a little bit better than The Purge, because it actually deals with some greater ramifications than than just being a throwaway thriller. You still watch this movie and you think things like, why do people prepare for the purge 5 minutes before the purge takes place? I mean, they literally are like, eh, should we lock the door? We still got 30 seconds. I don't understand that mentality, but that always seems to happen in these movies. I mean, I would be locking down 3 hours ahead of time. If you can get past the leaps in logic and the silliness and plot holes, this one's okay, and it works. It gets real heavy-handed with its message, but I liked it better than the other two. So The Purge election year kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Swiss Army Man.
I need you to help me get home. Okay, buddy?
Okay, buddy.
You're a miracle. Or I'm just hallucinating from starvation.
You're special. I'm special. So this is the life I've forgotten.
This was a movie that first hit my radar because people talked about it as saying, this is the movie in which Daniel Radcliffe plays a flatulent corpse. If you don't know what flatulent means, look it up on the internet. And that's a very accurate description of it. The story follows Paul Dano, who is shipwrecked on an island, and a corpse washes up on the beach. It's Daniel Radcliffe. And he soon discovers that the body can be used in certain ways. The flatulence can propel him across the ocean. He has teeth that he can use to shave with. He can use his belly as a canteen. He's kind of like a giant multi-tool with some extraordinary things that would not work with real corpses. Not that I've tried. So there's something magical about this. And then, of course, the corpse kind of becomes aware and they start having conversations. It's a way better relationship story than Tom Hanks in The Volleyball in Castaway. But this movie can have some pretty crass moments. Like I said, flatulent corpse. He uses his belly as a canteen, so to get the water out, he has to puke it out. But one of the most brilliant things about this film is when they have those moments that are very crass or gross or include body humor or fluids, the directors have made a point to make that scene so emotionally significant to the film that it actually becomes amazingly poignant and tremendously heartwarming. And that's a feat. It is a brilliantly done movie. It is also one of the most unique films you're going to see in a long time. It's released by A24, and I gotta tell you, I have a real soft spot for A24. They've released movies I've particularly disliked. For example, Spring Breakers a couple years ago. I hated that movie. And they've made movies that I absolutely loved, like Under the Skin, with Scarlett Johansson as the alien hunting people in Scotland, or Enemy, which I thought was really interesting, or even earlier this year, The Witch. And that's one of the things I love about A24. They give you some really different stories. For all the talk that people say, oh, all we have is sequels and remakes and reboots, not A24. They are giving you some amazingly cool and different and outside-of-the-box movies, stuff you've literally never seen before, which is what's so amazing about their slate of films. So if you're out there complaining, oh, I didn't like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, or oh, the X-Men movie just had too much CGI, go watch Swiss Army Man, because that is a movie that is wholly unique. It reminds me of when Being John Malkovich came out about 20 years ago. No, I had never seen anything like that. It was the most original movie I'd seen in that time period, Being John Malkovich was, and I feel that way about Swiss Army Man. I don't even know how this thing got greenlit. But God bless Daniel Radcliffe for letting himself be used and abused for this film as he did. Of all of the former Hogwarts kids, he is the one that is doing the best stuff. Yeah, I know Emma Watson's going to be doing Beauty and the Beast, but she's cobbled by her goody good image. And Daniel Radcliffe does a lot of different stuff, and some of his stuff isn't that good, but he's got some neat stuff under his belt. Figuratively, as an actor, but also literally in in Swiss Army Man. I loved Swiss Army Man. It's one of those that it's a shocker and a heartwarming, and really it is the feel-good movie of the year. So I'm going to have to say Swiss Army Man totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be giving my Fat Guy 5 on patriotic movies for July 4th weekend, the box office, and the home cinema roundup. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Keikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, finishing up the show for this week, this long 4th of July week. Happy 4th of July week, everybody, by the way. I forgot to mention that at the top of the show, this is such a significant weekend. I mean, for the history of the country, also because of movies. I mean, that's my business. It's sort of the halfway point in the summer. Granted, kids have only been out of school for a couple weeks, but now May is the beginning of the summer movie season. So you got all of May to go through, then you got all of June. And then you just have July and then August, and August is sort of like a half summer month itself, and it winds down to the doldrums in September. So it's kind of marks a halfway point. And I remember as a kid going and seeing movies on the 4th of July week, you know, obviously long before I became a critic. And it was always such a fun thing because the 4th of July, no matter where it falls in the week, it opens up an opportunity for people to enjoy their freedom over multiple days. If you're close to one weekend, you get a long weekend. If you're close to the other weekend, you get a long weekend. And I remember seeing movies like Die Hard 2 during the time when I was just out of high school. You still have the stuff from June in the theater. So you got movies like Finding Dory that are going to continue. But, you know, if you didn't like Independence Day Resurgence, you can still go see it. You know, it's still going to play through this weekend. And then you have a couple more big releases, and then August sort of peters out. It's a nice little tentpole in the middle of the summer. And I also have my kids who are in school and my wife's a teacher. So we all enjoy the summer and we always kind of have everything congregate on the 4th of July weekend and do some fun things. And there's nothing wrong with having fun to celebrate your freedom. There's so much angst right now. And you see people on Facebook posts where they're like, it's not just about beer and barbecues. Well, that's freedom. One thing I want to do, a Fat Guy 5 here, and it's five patriotic movies for the 4th of July weekend. Patriotism does not equal war. We have military-minded holidays. You have Memorial Day, you have Veterans Day. These are important holidays, and these you do need to pay reverence to our troops and reverence to our fallen, and those are great holidays, but 4th of July it's about the founding of our country. It's about the beginning of our country. It's about when we were given our freedoms. And you know what? Our free time is what defines our freedom in this country. And I enjoy spending time with my children. I enjoy spending time with my family. I enjoy having a good time and embracing the fact that we live in an age and a country where this can happen. So I want to talk about five patriotic movies that aren't necessarily about war. They might have a little bit of that in there, but we'll save those for the other holidays and focus on the freedoms, what you can do and how things work in a daily life, because 4th of July is a living holiday. It's a holiday of what's going on and what you can do and what it means to be an American. So the first one I want to talk about, Fat Guy 5, patriotic movies, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And part of the reason I love this movie is it's Jimmy Stewart, who's a fantastic actor anyways. And it's his ideals. And the fact that I think it shows you can have ideals and still live in a real world. I talked about a movie a couple weeks ago called The Congressman, which is about Treat Williams dealing with the seedy underbelly of politics. And that's there. But we need people like Mr. Smith because he is an idealistic guy who loves his country and wants it to work for him and gives everything he possibly can. The next one on my list is Yankee Doodle Dandy, which is, of course, a musical. It's a great celebration of music, of patriotism, and, of course, old cinema. And I like to, when I do these lists, I like to throw these in there. I haven't seen it in so long, but it's a great portrayal of George M. Cohen and his music and his life by James Cagney, who is most famous for playing gangsters, but gives a very different performance in this one. So it's worth checking out. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Now, the next one I want to hit in this list is Independence Day. I know I said that this wasn't going to be about war, but it's about aliens, so that's okay. And the reason Independence Day is significant this year is because you have the sequel coming out, and let's go check out the good one on DVD or Blu-ray or streaming somewhere. This one is still a great, fun summer blockbuster movie. It's about unity. It's about people banding together and forcing away outside tyranny. Yeah, it's an allegory to War of the Worlds, but that's okay. It's still a patriotic film that still gets to me when I watch it. I rewatched it with my kids last weekend, and we had a blast. And like I said, it's about uniting to fight a common enemy. In a similar vein, let's talk about the movie Miracle, which they're not fighting aliens in this, you're playing hockey against the Russians. But the reason Miracle I put as one of the most patriotic movies out there is that it is about, similar to Independence Day, a group of people having to come together and work as a unit. And that is essentially what the United States is. From the ragtag group of people that made it together and signed the Declaration of Independence, all the way to modern day, where you have all the different states getting varying degrees of say into things. The United States isn't just a single country. It's made up of all these different pieces and parts, and without the different pieces and parts, it's not the same country. The country would be different without Texas. It'd be different without Florida. It'd be different without Ohio or New York or Wyoming, for that matter. That's kind of the beauty of America, is it's all these different types of people who are united. And you get that with Miracle. Miracle shows that in the movie amazingly well. And then finally, the fifth one I'm going to say is Captain America, the First Avenger. Again, a little bit about war, because it takes place during World War II when we're fighting the Nazis. But it's more about the new introduction of the most patriotic superhero out there. And as much as Superman fights for truth, justice in the American way, and Iron Man as the rich guy making good on years of weaponization, you've got the Boy Scout, which is Captain America, and they do a great job introducing him to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And now we've had him in, what, like six movies or something? And his movies are some of the best run ones out there. Then finally, honorable mention, I have to give a little nod to Team America World Police, because that's one of the greatest satires ever made. Recently brought back into the limelight after the whole thing with The Interview, where Sony flinched in the face of North Korea and everyone wanted to race back and watch Team America. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, I said rather correctly that Finding Dory was going to win. I said $75 million. I was so close. It made $73 million. So I was dead on that one. And I also said that Independence Day Resurgence wasn't even going to crack that $50 million that it made the first time around 20 years ago. Again, I was totally right on that. It only made $41 million. That's actually quite bad. People are arguing whether that's a bomb. And it's not 20. It's not 10. This is not in Ishtar territory. But when a movie costs $165 million, and the first one that was made 20 years ago topped it in its box office opening weekend, that's not a good sign. Now it's doing better overseas, but I mean, it really has to do well overseas to overcome that and to even justify doing a sequel. Now, why did that tank so much? I think not just because the movie wasn't that great, but I think not having Will Smith in it sort of harmed it, because it kind of made news that he wasn't in it. But on top of that, you also had Liam Hemsworth as our anchor star. Nobody cares about him. Nobody cared about the characters. And it's kind of old hat. It's old news. We've seen this before. It just wasn't a very good movie. This week, I think there's going to be a lot of competition with Finding Dory. I think the BFG is a nice enough movie for families to watch. I think Tarzan has somewhat interest to it. But ultimately, those movies, I don't think, are generating that much buzz. And I think really Finding Dory is going to probably win the third weekend in a row. Because, I mean, it made $75 million last week, and it'll make, oh gosh, I'd say at least $40 million. By the time you get to the three-day weekend, you're going to be looking at more than $40 million. These other ones, I think, are going to be struggling to crack $35. And Independence Day 2 is going to sink like a stone. I'd be surprised if it makes $20. Then The Purge is going to do better than it would have just because it's the bonkers election season. I'm looking probably 20 to 25 million. These movies tend to do well. And there's no other hard R horror action movie really giving it a run for its money right now in the box office. So it's kind of got its own audience, and that's it. Swiss Army Man's not going to register very high, but A24 movies really don't, but it's worth seeing. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. First piece I want to talk about is Adventures in Babysitting. This is, of course, the Disney Channel remake of the classic movie with Elizabeth Shue from the 80s. The Disney Channel did their version of it, so obviously it's going to be far more sanitized, and it's Disney Channelized. You've also got Kung Fu Panda 3, which came out earlier this year, and it's kind of neat to see. That movie was better than I thought it would be. Eye in the Sky, which is about drone activity, starring Helen Mirren. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. And then finally, the Criterion Collection edition of Dr. Strangelove, or How I Stopped Worrying and Learned to Love the Bomb. That's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates and The Secret Life of Pets. Happy 4th of July, everybody, and have a fat time at the movies.